In 1987, in Midland, Texas, there was an 18-month-old little girl named Jessica McClure, and she fell into a well in her aunt's backyard. The opening she fell through was only 8 inches wide, and she ended up 22 feet underground. Some of you may remember this when it was covered, because this was the first news event that was covered around the clock, 24/7, by a network. The little Jessica's rescue took 58 hours, almost 2.5 days. And she was rescued. We've got a picture that ended up becoming a famous picture from that story. She's a 30-year-old wife and mom now. But here's something that was really interesting to me about this story. The very first thing that rescuers did when they got to that site was to make contact with Jessica. Sure, to make sure that she was alive, that was important, but it was really critical that she understood that she was not alone, that there were people who were coming to get her. They didn't want her to panic. They didn't want her to go into shock or anything like that. They kept her communicating. Here's what I've learned. It is so critical that we not try to go through life by ourselves. It just doesn't work so well that way. We need intentional relationships with people that will help get us through those times like this. Because there are going to be times in your life, in my life, where it feels like we've fallen in this deep, dark well. Got to have the right people on our side to help us. Now, my best friend in the whole wide world is Cindy, my wife, sitting right there. She knows me better, closer to me than anybody else alive. And God has used her in my life more than any other person in my adult life to help guide me and direct me and get me moving in the direction He wants me to go. My parents have made and continue to make a big impact in my life. But I still need other friends at times. I need guys especially to come alongside of me. And those relationships don't just happen. They've got to be cultivated. Now, we can all say that we have, you know, acquaintances, that maybe you say you've got a lot of friends, but do you realize that there are a lot of people that don't have intentional relationships like we're talking about? So this morning, I want to introduce you to Lee. Lee's been my best buddy since eighth grade. Now, when I say that Lee's my best friend, and I just finished saying that Cindy's my best friend, you understand that those are different, right? All right, Cindy, nobody knows me better than her, even Lee. But Lee's that guy that's been a part of my life for more than 40 years now. Now, when God created Lee and I, He made us opposite in a lot of ways. One of those ways you can see. This was in ninth grade. I had not yet made it to 5 feet or 100 pounds. Lee was already almost 6 feet and over 200 pounds. I think we might have been the original odd couple. We were opposite in other ways. I put those circles around our heads because I want you to know that Lee's a Louisville fan. And like all good Christians, I'm a Kentucky fan. And yet we still love each other. But we're alike in a whole lot of ways too. We value a lot of the same things. Our faith in Christ is paramount to us. Our families are critical to us. We're both in ministry and we love being a part of that. We've been through a lot. We were best buddies in junior high and high school. We lived together all 4 years in college. Not many friendships make it through that. We went to the same seminary in Texas. And since we graduated from seminary many years ago, we have only lived in the same location for about 2 years when we were on staff at our home church. But other than that, most of the time we've been separated by hundreds of miles. And in spite of the distance, there's been this consistency of caring and support and encouragement between us. In fact, our friendship reminds me a lot of this friendship that we find in the Old Testament between two guys named Jonathan and David. I want to give you a little background about these fellas. Jonathan was the son of Saul, who was king of Israel. David was the youngest in his family. He was just a shepherd boy. His brothers were all grown men. They were fighting in the army of Israel. And so David was left home alone to stay out in the fields with the family sheep. Until one day, David's dad, Jesse, sent him to where the battle was going on to go check on his brothers to see how they were doing, taking some supplies. At that point in history, Israel was at war with the Philistines. And they were at this valley, and the Israelite army was all camped out on one side of the valley, and the Philistines over on the other side. And so every day they would line up in their battle lines and get ready for battle, and then the Philistines would send out their champion warrior, this big guy named Goliath. He was literally a giant, over 9 feet tall. And he would come out in the middle of the battlefield and roar out this challenge, "Send out your best guy. Send him out. We're going to fight one-on-one, winner take all." Well, the same thing happened every time Goliath issued this challenge. Not a single man in Israel's army would volunteer. They would all shake for fear, and they would run back and hide in their tents. Well, one day, David shows up when that challenge is taking place, and he couldn't believe it. He's looking up and down the line. He's looking at his brothers. He's looking, and nobody's stepping out to volunteer. He can't believe that not a single man will stand up for the God of Israel and fight for God's armies there. He just couldn't believe it. His brothers or people are telling him, "Shut up, go back to tending your sheep." But what David does instead is he volunteers. Now, what surprises me about this story is, one, that not a single man of Israel, from the king all the way down, not a single one would step out there and fight the giant. The other thing that surprises me even more is that they let a shepherd boy do it for them. And so David goes out on the battlefield with absolutely nothing but a slingshot. And those of you who know the story, you know what happens. That David launches that stone and puts it right in Goliath's forehead and kills him dead. Then the Israelite army gets their courage up, charges, and goes after the Philistines and defeats them. So they bring David to Saul, and that's where we come in the story where David and Jonathan meet. I want to read a few verses to you from 1 Samuel chapter 18, starting in the first verse. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Even the way these guys connected instantly reminds me a little bit of Lee and me. We were about to start eighth grade. My family moved back to Louisville, which was home for us. We had lived away for several years. And Lee and I don't remember knowing each other before from our home church. But all we know is that when we met right at the beginning of eighth grade, we became best friends. Just like that. And the same thing kind of happened to Jonathan and David. They met, and man, their hearts were knit together immediately. Then there were these gifts that Jonathan gave David. They were significant. They were valuable because he was the king's son. And the fact that he gave David his weapons, his sword and his bow, that meant that he trusted David with everything in him. Well, David hung out at the palace a lot in those days, and so they got to know each other real well. But another part of the story is that the whole incident with Goliath turned David into a national hero. He was instant celebrity of Israel, and everybody in Israel was singing his praises, and Saul didn't like it. The king got jealous. He didn't want this kid taking his glory as the king, so he decided to get rid of the competition. He tried to kill David on a number of occasions. And we see the commitment of Jonathan in that Jonathan stood up to his dad for David on more than once, and even took his own life in his hands in doing so. And understand this, Jonathan was next in line for the throne. By virtue of his birth, he was going to be the next king of Israel, but he understood that God had already chosen David for that role. And he supported his friend in what God wanted to do in his life. Well, even after Saul killed himself in a battle, Jonathan was killed in that battle, and finally Israel made David their king. Even years later, after David's rule had been firmly established, David remembered his commitment to Jonathan, his love for his friend, and he sought out Jonathan's only son and brought him back to the palace to live with him and care for him and provide for his needs the rest of his life. He was intentional about that friendship. There's another friendship in the Old Testament years before David that I just want to mention real quick, because this isn't one that we normally associate with friendship. See, there's a lady named Naomi, and her and her husband had left Israel. They moved to another nearby country to live and do business. They took their two sons with them. Their sons married girls from that country, and wasn't at some point in this story, Naomi's husband died. And then her two sons died, and she was left with no means of support and two daughters-in-law. And she decided the best thing for her to do would be to move back to Israel and get close to family again, maybe find somebody that would take care of her and provide for her in her old age. And so she told her daughters-in-law, she said, look, you are young, you don't have kids yet, stay here, go back to your family, your own people, get married, raise a family, that's what you need to do. And so one of the girls took her up on that and she left, but Ruth, she absolutely refused to leave Naomi. Wasn't because of any kind of moral or legal obligation. She was just committed. She was intentionally committed to this lady that she had come to love. This was a genuine friendship. Here's how Ruth responded when Naomi tried one more time to tell Ruth to stay. This is in the book of Ruth, 1st chapter, verse 16. But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God." You might have heard that verse before, and if you did, it's likely been at a wedding. But the context of this is not a marriage thing at all. This is an intentional commitment by a young lady for this woman who admits so much to her. She said, look, I'm going where you go. Your family's now going to become my family. I'm going to worship and follow your God. Here's what I've learned over the course of my life. I need intentional friendships in my life. People like David, Jonathan, and Ruth. Let me tell you what I need from these relationships. First, I need people who will protect me. It's all about accountability and blind spots. Here's a story about Lee and me. When we were in ninth grade, we went with a group of kids from our church to this small amusement park in Louisville. At the time, it was called Ghost Town on the River. It was a really good name because nobody ever went there. And so there were about 20 of us from our youth group, a handful of other people. So we basically had the run of the park to ourselves that night. We could ride all the rides as much as we wanted to. There was this old roller coaster in that park. I've got a picture of the exact roller coaster. At that time, it was either the oldest or one of the oldest operating wooden roller coasters in the United States. Now, I had never ridden a big boy roller coaster before. I'd just not been to amusement parks or anything like that. And so my buddy Lee takes me under his wing to teach me how you're supposed to ride a roller coaster. Things like, you know, you hold up your hands when you're going down the hills, right? You don't just hold the bar and grit your teeth and close your eyes. He taught me when to scream, when it's not okay to scream. He taught me that if I have to throw up, to turn my head to the outside. You know, important stuff like that. So we start riding this roller coaster. We rode it one time after another, over and over again. But the lady who was running the ride would not allow us to just stay there. Every time it stopped, we had to get out, run around the exit, all the way around the front, run back through all the turnstiles, and get on again. And so we did this about 17 times in a row. And so finally, Lee and I got the front car. We had been trying all evening to get in that front car. We had been in almost every other seat in it, and we finally made it. So somewhere during this ride, we went over one of those small quick hills. It wasn't down one of the big ones. It was over one of those small quick ones, and it popped me up. Now, you saw the difference in size between Lee and myself, right? So that safety bar was snug on Lee's lap, not on mine. And so we hit that little hill, and it threw me up, and I was leaning out over the front of the car and continuing to move that direction, and Lee reached up and grabbed me by the belt and yanked me back down in the car. So I'm standing here talking to you this morning because Lee saved my life. Listen, there have been times in my life where I've gotten into places that were not safe for me. I've gotten into situations that were not healthy. Sometimes I got in places that I didn't even know I was in a bad spot. And I've needed friends who would reach up and pull me back and protect me. And it wasn't much fun when it happened either. Listen to Proverbs 27:6. Wounds from a friend can be trusted. Even though it was painful at the time, I needed people to protect me like that. But I also needed people to push me. This is about encouragement. I find that in my life it's easy sometimes to get discouraged. Sometimes it's easy for me to slip into complacency. And Cindy's, man, she's my number one encourager. She's been the best cheerleader I've ever had. My parents have always been good at encouraging me. Lee's been there through a lot of different seasons in my life. There have been times where I experienced hurt, times where there was, you know, failure in my life, where I made bad choices. And there were people who stepped in to encourage me, to help me through those times and to continue to push me in the right direction. But it wasn't just people carrying me through the crisis times of my life. There have been people who've pushed me closer to God, who've challenged me to be a better follower of Jesus. Now, sometimes the encouragement I've needed has been a kick in the seat of the pants. But I'm glad there were people who were willing to do that for me, because there have been times that I knew what I was supposed to do, but I needed a nudge in the right direction. And believe me, and you know this too, that there it's easy to find people who will push us in the wrong direction. But listen to Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. I need the right people to push me, to spur me on closer to God. Now, I also need people who will really pray for me. And listen, I know that God hears me. I understand that principle. I believe that He listens to my prayers, but I still need people who are protecting me and pushing me to talk to God on my behalf. And this takes it to a whole nother level, because I need people who are genuinely connected to God themselves. Because here's what happens. When somebody is really praying for me, when I know that they care enough to pray for me, then I also know that they want to protect me from things that should not be a part of my life. There are also the people who want to push me closer in my relationship with God. Not just anybody will do. I need people who are seriously interested in going to God on my behalf. Look at James 5:16. Says the prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. I need righteous people praying for me. So I have been and need to continue to be intentional about finding people in my life who will protect me and push me and pray for me. And maybe you're thinking, Wes, come on, be a man, stand on your own two feet. You're so needy. My response to that is, yes, I am. I am needy. I'm definitely a work in progress, but I want to continue to make progress. As a staff, recently, we've been talking about where we're going as a church and what that looks like and some of the things that have to happen for us to get there. One of the things that we've discussed is, what are the marks of a person who is maturing in their walk with Christ? What does it look like when somebody is growing as a Christian? One of those marks that we've talked about is connecting with other followers of Jesus. Part of our strategy as a church is to help you connect like that. Let me ask you some questions. Do you know that you need protection? That there are areas of your life that you need help in? Do you understand that you have blind spots? There are things that other people see that you might not. Or would you just rather live in secret? because I've had periods of my life where I lived there and it was a dangerous place. Do you have the humility to be pushed closer to God? Or would you just rather kind of stay in that comfort zone? Are you close to people whose prayers genuinely impact your life? People who are really connected to Jesus? And then are you being this kind of friend to the people around you? Are you protecting and pushing and praying for somebody? Yep, you need the same things that I need. It's why we do small groups. We call them connect groups here at Grace. See, we know, we understand that when you come on Sunday morning, you're going to learn, you're going to grow, you're going to get good stuff here as we worship together when you hear Andrew teach. But what I'm talking about this morning, these things that I'm talking about, these intentional relationships, you cannot get by only being here on Sunday morning. It won't work. It's not possible. But I hear what some of you are thinking right now. I hear the thoughts in your head. Some of you are thinking, I don't have time for that. I don't have enough room in my schedule to be a part of a group. You know, first of all, listen, we're not just trying to fill your calendar. We don't want to just fill our calendar. But you know as well as I do that we make room for the things that really matter. And I promise you, this really matters. Some of you are also thinking, I've already got friends. Number one, your Facebook list does not count. But more importantly, genuine spiritual growth is unsustainable without the right people in your life. Won't happen. I want you to listen to the story this morning of a couple who understands all this.
Hi, my name's Bill. This is my wife, Levina. We have two boys, Abe and Ben Johnson. We've been coming to Grace for a little over a year now and are really excited about everything that it has to offer.
Once we got plugged into Grace, we realized that we really wanted to be more involved with the church. Obviously, we wanted to be good examples for our children, get our children excited. The children are the future, as they say. We really wanted to find our place within the church, and we knew that a small group was the way to get that started.
Wes approached me one day about becoming a small group leader. We knew that we wanted some better relationships with God's purpose, so this was a great opportunity. It was kind of last second, and there was a couple of families that really were groupless. And Wes approached me and said, hey, can you take the lead on this group? And I was really excited. I had to ask my wife first because...
I'm in charge.
But we took the lead, and we're really excited. And awesome decision.
The hesitations that we had probably when we were considering joining a group were just that life is busy. Our biggest decision was not do we want to, but do we have the time to. And what we decided was that you make time for what's important. And in doing so, it has helped every other aspect of our life, including the pre-teenage boys that can be a challenge and the stressful jobs. And all of that becomes more manageable when you have this group of people that are like-minded that you can go through life with.
It's become a choice to make it a priority opposed to try and fit it in.
Yeah, so I think with our first small group session, he and I both found we were maybe lacking in a relationship, like a good friendship, that we're each other's best friends, because that's how it is. But he needed a man and I needed a woman. And in this setting, we were able to speak freely, be transparent, listen to each other, build those relationships. And then, I mean, out of that, you have a relationship that lasts forever that is there to support you. Interestingly enough, one of those families actually is our best friends now, and we do life together, and they're in our group now also, and they're stuck with us, whether they like it or not. I mean, everybody has a story, and when you're... This is a good-sized church, and the small groups give you an opportunity to share your story with other people, and you don't know what people are experiencing the same as you are that can be there in your corner when you need somebody in your corner. So we're all for it. We're cheerleaders for small group.
Bill and Levina get it. They understand how important this is. And listen, one thing we're not trying to do is we're not trying to help you find your new best friends for life. We're just trying to help you develop positive, healthy, intentional relationships. It's why we gave you this booklet this morning when you came in. We want to give you an opportunity to look through and see the groups that we have that are open. There actually will probably be a couple more groups by next week by the time we do our sign-ups. But on next Sunday, we're going to have our Connect Group sign-up fair. And after each service, people are going to get a chance to go out and meet leaders and sign up for a group. And our challenge to you is this morning. If you're not already in one of our groups, I want to challenge you to just give it a shot. We're going to only ask you to commit to one semester, just 3 months, February through April. Just see if this doesn't make a significant impact in your life. I promise you, it will. Back in 1903, there was a guy by the name of Hugh Black that wrote a book that was simply titled Friendship. I want to close by reading this quote from that book to you. There is nothing so important as the choice of friendship, for it both reflects character and affects it. A man is molded into the likeness of the lives that come nearest him. Do you have friends that are protecting and pushing and praying for you? Are you doing that for somebody else? You have to be intentional about it for that to happen. We'd like to give you the opportunity to do so. Let me pray for you this morning. God, I want to thank you that you created us as relational beings. You did that so that we could relate to you, but you also knew that we need each other. God, I pray that as a church, as a family here, we will be committed to building these kind of intentional relationships with one another. We will find people that will be agents of protection in our life, that will push us closer to you, that will pray for us on a regular basis. And we need to be doing that for each other. God, I pray that even as we sign up for groups, that you'll do some amazing things. We'll get to hear more and more stories like Bill and Levina's and see how people's lives and families and homes and marriages and so much else has changed because of that. God, thank you for what you're going to do. We ask in Jesus' name.